This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
October 4th, 2010. This is a two-hour combined Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report, and Housing Notebook special produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Highlights of the One Nation Working Together March on Washington.
Listen to highlights of the march, the stirring speeches by AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka, U.S. Representative Luis Gutierrez, Darlene Nippa, the Deputy Executive Director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, President of the Rainbow Push Coalition, Mary Kay Henry, President of the Service Employees International Union, and Ben Jealous, NAACP Director, and a remarkable call for jobs, peace, and justice from the great Harry Belafonte, along with the voices of American Workers for Jobs with Justice, as well as labor greats like Cecil Roberts, president of the United Mine Workers Union. One Nation, Working Together. March on Washington, sponsored by the AFL-CIO, the NAACP, and the National Council of La Raza, and hundreds of progressive organizations demanding jobs to put people to work and back to work. Jobs, economic security, comprehensive immigration reform, safe and renewable energy policies, and a reversal of national priorities from making wars to meeting human needs. That was the message.
We marched to demand the change we voted for when Barack Obama was elected. That's right, create jobs and stop moving money out of education and into wars and prisons. And perhaps the most profound of the banners and chants was that we are the change we waited for.
Indeed. So now to the massive 20, well, it's 10 to 10. I still have to get that right, the 10 to 10, the great One Nation March, working together in Washington, D.C. To the march.
Hello, One Nation. My name is Angela Orofsky from Bent Salem, Pennsylvania. I know how painful it is to be out of work. I was laid off 2 years ago. I've been looking and looking with no avail. This year, I joined Working America as a volunteer because I know I may be unemployed, but I've still got a job to do. I am organizing jobless people because it's horrible out there. All we want is work. I don't believe that's too much to ask. Working people need to catch a break sometime. Thank you.
Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. Hola, America. Hello, One Nation. My name is Ms. Minaya, and I am a public school teacher from New York City in Washington Heights. I need everyone to hear the voice of our educators. I am marching with you today because I believe that the American dream begins in our classrooms. I believe that educators are a big part of the solution, And it's wrong to paint us as the problem. I believe that good jobs and a quality public education for all goes hand in hand. Thank you. Gracias. Trabajando juntos, hacemos la diferencia.
My name is Michelle Esquilin. I'm a home care attendant from the Bronx. I care for my elderly clients. I don't make a lot of money, and it's hard, but I love my job. I make people feel secure when I'm there with them. They count on me because I'll be there. I'm marching so that everyone can do their jobs they love and still make a good living. Thank you.
I'm Bernie Hall, and I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm proud to say that I'm a steel worker. I'm marching today because we need to bring manufacturing jobs back to America. We need to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, and our schools. We need to get back to making things in America again.
Thank you, union brothers and sisters. And now, the president of the AFL-CIO, Mr. Richard Trumka.
Hello, America. You know, you look like one nation, one beautiful nation. There is nothing that we can't do when we stand together, side by side, shoulder to shoulder. There's no power greater than what you see all around here today in our nation's capital. If you watch too much TV, you might think that we're a nation full of hate, that we've turned against the values that made our country great. But no, that's not America. America is here today. America is freedom of religion. America is Dr. King and President Lincoln and their spirit living in you and me today. America is one nation, and we signify that nation. But never forget, behind the voices of fear and hatred are the forces of greed, the moneyed powers that put us in the economic mess that we're in today. So we have a lot of work to do to repair the damage that greed did to our country. We come together today because America needs jobs, good jobs, jobs that will support families, jobs that will give our young people paths of opportunity, not obstacles. We need an economy that works for Main Street. You see, it's going to take something big to get America going again. And if we're going to build our dreams, turn them into reality, then we have to be bold. We have to rebuild our schools, our roads, our bridges. We have to compete and win in the world economy with investments in world-class energy, high-speed rail, and green technology so that we can fight climate change and create good jobs. And we have to ensure that working men and women have the freedom to make every last job a good job by joining together in a union to bargain for a better life. That's the American dream. The promise that if you work hard, you can have a good life, earn a living wage, and a future for your children. And that's what we can do as one nation. Promise that you won't let anybody divide us or turn us against each other. And promise that you'll make your voices heard for good jobs and justice and education today and on Election Day. Because we believe in this one nation, and we're ready to fight for it. So it's time for you to stand together, fight together, and we will win together, and we won't let anyone stand in our way.
It's about the power to the people. I want to turn the program over now to my great progressive brother, Mr. Joe Madison. I just found out they sent in a satellite image of the crowd. Somebody go tell Glenn Beck there are more people here right now than there was on the 29th. In the back, can I say hello? Go run and tell that to the Tea Party folks. 47 years ago, A. Philip Randolph said, if you look for the enemies of Medicare, of higher minimum wage, of Social Security, of federal aid to education, there you will find the enemy of the Negro, the coalition of Dixiecrats and reactionary Republicans that seek to dominate Congress. Advance those words to 2010, change Dixiecrat to Tea Party, reactionary Republicans, they're still there, and we cannot let them dominate Congress or the White House. We stand on the shoulders of some people who are here on the front row, and the front row is where they should be. Let me recognize one of the Little Rock Nine. Ladies and gentlemen, please, Ernie Green, give him a round of applause. It is now my honor to introduce another giant who's been on the scene for seems like ever. You only have to say two words. Harry Belafonte!
Thank you. I would like to start off by thanking all my brothers and sisters in 1199, and the president of that union, Mr. George Gershom. Thank you for inviting me to participate in today's ceremony. In 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. stood on the steps of this memorial and declared that this nation should come together and embrace its greater ideals. He said that we should rally together and overcome injustice and racism, and that all citizens should not only have the right to vote, but that we should exercise that right and make America whole. That is part of why we are here today. But we are also here to tend to other grievances. Martin Luther King Jr. said that America would soon come to realize that the war that we were in at that time, in Vietnam, was not only unconscionable, but unwinnable. 58,000 Americans died in that cruel adventure, and over 2 million Vietnamese and Cambodians perished. Now today, almost a half a century later, as we gather at this place where Dr. King prayed for the soul of this great nation, tens of thousands of citizens from all walks of life have come here today to rekindle his dream and once again hope all America will soon come to the realization that the wars that we wage today in faraway lands are immoral, unconscionable, and unwinnable. The Central Intelligence Agency tells us that the enemy we pursue in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, the Al-Qaeda, they number less than 50, I say 50 people. Do we really think that sending 100,000 young American men and women to kill innocent civilians, women and children, and antagonizing the tens of millions of people in the whole region somehow makes us secure? Does this make any sense? The president's decision to escalate the war in that region alone costs the nation $33 billion. That sum of money could not only create 600,000 jobs here in America, but would even leave us a few billion to start rebuilding our schools, our roads, our hospitals, and affordable housing. It could also help to rebuild the lives of the thousands of our returning wounded veterans. Dr. King loved this nation. He saw that this great nation should not be allowed to perish. Martin's vision was also the vision of Abraham Lincoln, who understood the evil of slavery, and in abolishing that evil, saved America. Although slavery may have been abolished, crippling poison of racism still persists, and the struggle still continues. We have the largest prison population in the world, and as we industrialize these prison systems, we rob hundreds of thousands of workers of the jobs that they need and the wages that are rightfully theirs. The plight of women bear no better. Their oppression refuses to yield as rape and domestic violence and sex slaves and teenage pregnancy abounds. But perhaps the greatest threat of all is the undermining of our Constitution and the systematic attack against the inalienable rights of the citizens of this nation, rights that are guaranteed by our Constitution. At the vanguard of this insidious attack is the Tea Party. This band of misguided citizens is moving perilously close to achieving villainous ends. This gathering here today is America's wake-up call. The giant called democracy is at last stirring again. Citizens are coming together to say freedom does not sleep. It may have been fueled and lulled for the moment into a lethargy, but it's fully awake now, and we the people are its engine. We must awaken the apathetic, the cynical, the many angry doubters who see their future as the perpetual hopelessness, and show them that our greatest weapon is the vote, and it is the answer to much that nags in us. On November 2nd, in the millions, we must overburden our voting booths by voting against those who would see the nation become a totalitarian state. Americans know that Dr. King's dream is not dead. Let us vote on November 2nd for jobs, for jobs, for jobs, for peace, for justice, for human rights, for our children, and the future of America, and let us put an end to war. Peace is necessary for justice. It is necessary for hope. It is necessary for our future. I love you all.
Please welcome Congressman Luis Gutierrez and Darlene Nipper.
I am honored to stand here today with Congressman Luis Gutierrez, a true advocate for justice. He is an energetic spokesman on behalf of his constituents in Illinois' 4th District and has earned widespread acclaim throughout the nation.
The mission of the National Gay Lesbian Task Force is to build the grassroots power of the LGBT community by training activists and advancing legislation. Darlene Nipper is the Deputy Executive Director of that fine organization.
I stand here before you as a proud, openly lesbian, African-American woman. I am not either black or a lesbian. I am both and so much more. And I know that I'm not alone here today. There are so many more here just like me and across the country who are just like me. And like you, I seek justice for all of us. Justice means equal rights for everyone, regardless of race, ethnicity, class, sex, gender expression, sexual orientation, or ability. A just society means an end to racial profiling. It means stemming the tides of anti-immigrant extremist behavior. We are so proud that last year Congress passed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. I hope we never forget those two men and the hundreds of others who died at the hands of hatred. Matthew Shepard, who was killed for his gayness, and James Byrd, who was killed for his blackness. Yes, our communities are tied and united together. Our communities, people of color, and those in the lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgender community stand united against hate crimes of any type against anyone. Justice also means not turning our backs on the hundreds and thousands of black and Latino and other people wrongly incarcerated each year. Our system is broken when in 2010 we are adding more beds to our prisons than seats to our classrooms or jobs to our economy. The time is now to promote justice and fairness for all in this country. Protection from employment and housing discrimination continues to elude so many of us. We have to invest in our communities by educating our young, caring for our elders, and ensuring that all of our families thrive. Because while we know it is a challenge, I believe, and I know you do too, Representative Gutierrez, that it is the diversity of this nation that makes our nation so great. Diversity is our greatest strength. Our youth, be they bisexual, straight, gay, lesbian, transgender, questioning, immigrant, or other, don't need steel bars or homeless shelters. They need supportive families. They need love. They need acceptance. And they need a quality education safe from harassment and bullying of any type. The unfortunate suicides that have taken the lives of so many young this past week are still heavy on my heart. Our youth need hope. To the young people who are being bullied and harassed, as a person who came out as a teenager, I want you to know it will get better. Let's pave the road to independence and self-sufficiency for our young people with love so that youth suicides never happen again. We will have achieved justice when, regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, age, race, or ethnicity, we all have freedom from discrimination and equal access to jobs, justice, and education. Finally, I want to say to you, Representative Gutierrez, thank you for working for justice for all of us. Thank you all. Vote One Nation.
Thank you. Today I want to talk about two important words. Hard work. I want to talk about the men and the women who clear the dishes in restaurants, the man who supports his family by working as a janitor, the woman bent over sewing machines, making our clothes, the women caring for America's children, the families picking America's fruit. It's hard work. Yet immigrants come to our nation to work at dangerous and sometimes demeaning jobs to face the risk of discrimination and deportations. They come to do hard work. On TV news, we don't see many pictures of the immigrants sweeping the floor in the hospital or caring for a sick child. But we see lots of pictures of scary invaders jumping over fences or prisoners in handcuffs. Far too many people, the two words that come to mind when they think of immigrants are, go home. It's our job to replace them with two words that tell the real story, hard work. The people who marched in this spot 47 years ago knew something about hard work, Darlene. Because the struggle for fairness, for justice, for freedom is hard work too. Protecting our civil rights is hard work. And our immigrant struggle for civil rights is born of the African-American struggle for civil rights. The Latino and immigrant struggle is not a reinvention of the civil rights movement. It is the continuation of the civil rights movement. Growing bigger, growing stronger, picking up new allies along the way. Helping each of us, letting everybody know nobody will turn us around. We cannot achieve justice for immigrants without the words and actions of Dr. King and his brothers and sisters. You don't get a Cesar Chavez without a Martin Luther King. You don't get Sonia Sotomayor without Thurgood Marshall. You don't get Roberto Clemente without Jackie Robinson. And you don't get comprehensive immigration reform without civil rights for all in this nation. We did get Sonia Sotomayor. We did get Roberto Clemente. We did get Cesar Chavez. And together we will get comprehensive reform too of our immigration system. People always say the struggle is too hard. The goal is just too far away. But we know that the arc of moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. We know it's true. We've seen it. You know, Darlene, it used to be illegal for workers to form a union. It used to be illegal for women to vote. It used to be illegal for blacks and whites to attend the same schools. But because we did the hard work, the arc of the moral universe bent. It bent towards workers' rights, voting rights, and housing rights. But right now, it is illegal for millions of people who live in this country to come out of the shadows and enjoy the prosperity of their hard work and the responsibilities that come with citizenship. We are here to work hard to keep bending that arc until it watches over every immigrant in this nation. And I'm not going to stop fighting until we turn on the news and see the pictures of immigrants doing hard work and making America great. The fight for justice and jobs and civil rights is a movement. It is a family of workers, of straight men and gay women, of Asians and African Americans, of women, of every single immigrant of our nation. Abraham Lincoln, the man we built this memorial to, understood it 150 years ago. A nation divided against itself cannot stand. So together, as a family, we will rise up. We will stand and we will run together towards justice for every American, whether they were lucky enough to be born here or ambitious enough to have come here to make this land their own. It's hard work, but we can do it. Si se puede!
Si se puede!
I was born by the river in a little tent. And just like that river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes, there is. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes, there is. And so I went to my brother, and I said, brother, help me, please. But he just wound up knocking me back down on my knees. There were times that I thought I wouldn't last too long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come.
I couldn't help but play as a segue of Vance Gilbert doing Sam Cooke's A Change is Gonna Come, because as I thought about the speeches that I listened to when I attended the 10 to 10, the One Nation March and Rally, I thought of the promise of change and the slogan that so many people had on their banners and their placards and uttered. And part of that was, we are the change that we voted for. And most significantly, on that glorious, cloudless day, with so many of the working class and such a preponderance of African American working class people from Florida, from South Carolina, from upstate Buffalo, Syracuse, and really places south, 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 and Midwest who had come to Washington, I thought of a change is going to come. The hope and the promise of change. And while people were out there demonstrating the recognition that they indeed are the change that we have waited for, because with their muscle and their struggle and their pronouncements and their pushing, invariably, inevitably, with consistency, the government will be forced to bend to the mighty arc of the universe, which is the power of the collective that was there. It was a gorgeous rainbow display, with very much, again, the leadership of the African-American working class, but such broad representation and such a pure and genuine message that evolved from the hundreds of thousands of people, not tens of thousands, but the hundreds of thousands of people who came to express themselves in the call for what had been called for 47 years earlier by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and that was jobs and justice.
And it also shows that when the movements for social change come together, when the movements for immigration reform, when the movements for civil rights, when the movements for labor rights and so many more, when they start, in our terms, building bridges, that really builds power. And it's good that this march took place, and it's wonderful that it took place. But we have to maintain the spirit of this march beyond the elections. It can't be just something building up toward these elections. We have to create mobilizations after the elections to hold the politicians accountable. And we have to go beyond what the politicians say to move them to a new reality so they really get jobs, peace, and freedom. And wasn't Harry great?
Harry Belafonte
was fantastic.
One of the absolutely eloquent, handsome articulators of the sentiments that people held deep in their breast. It's just What a brilliant man. What a absolutely, in the best sense, charismatic evocation of what rouses people to action. Yes, he was brilliant. And while we listened in the first part of tonight's two-hour special, indeed, One Nation, Working Together, we listened to the head of the AFL, CIO, and Harry Belafonte, and the last piece we heard was from Representative Luis Gutierrez, and we heard from the Deputy Executive Director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. Well, where we're moving now with our theme that change is going to come because we are the change that we voted for, and projections and recordations of the One Nation March, which we recorded specially for you. We're going to go into the crowd now and listen to some of the, not exactly the notaries, but they are the heroes, they are the sheroes of the change that is to come and the change that we have indeed waited for, the men and the women who attended. So let's listen to some of what they had to say from the One Nation March, 10 to 10.
I'm standing in the midst of a sea of red shirts, which are CWA Local 1180 shirts, and we're with Arthur Chiliotis. And Arthur, how many of your members came, and why are you here, brother?
We have four buses, a couple of hundred people. We would have ordered more buses if we could have found more buses, but we couldn't. There was a great enthusiasm and an understanding on the part of the members of how important this forthcoming election is to begin to change this country around, and understanding that the rhetoric that we hear in the mass media does not reflect the reality of life for most working Americans, or an understanding of the power relationships and dynamics that need to change if we're to be effective at bringing about change for working people.
And what specifically are the issues that you're most concerned about?
We've got to try to address the issue of how the rich got so rich over these last 30 years. And I think the core of that is going back to the Reagan tax cuts that allowed people who were all very rich to get even more money, which they invested very wisely in the Congress and the state legislatures. And they effectively stripped our democracy of the regulatory authority that government agencies have to run their operations. You see it in terms of the SEC and the economic crash. You see it in terms of the oil and mining industries and what happened in the Gulf. It's all a matter of corporate America getting their people in, sabotaging from within government agencies that should be run by career civil servants rather than people who take the revolving door to get in and out and really work for the corporations, or just work for the government part-time to make sure that they're not regulated. It's a matter of taking back our government and putting into place people who are committed to the American people and not to this greedy, self-serving profit agenda that has brought about the destruction of our economy.
You're the president of Communication Workers of America, Local 1180. More and more I see a kind of obfuscation of the concept of class. People address the middle class and it's as though everybody is in the middle class. But the concept of working people and working class seems to have disappeared from the lexicon of virtually every politician and certainly in the media discourses. Do you have any thoughts about what it means to be a member of the working class and why it's important to define people as workers?
The definition I like to use of the working class, if you need a paycheck in order to have a roof over your head, clothing on your back, and food in your stomach, you're part of the working class. If you don't go to work, you're not going to be able to survive. That's what I look at as a definition of the working class. But of course, we live in a society where we have had, over the last 30, 40 years, brainwashing. The American people did not realize what happened to them, how they've been sold this bill of goods, that somehow they are better off. And so we need to understand that one of the elements that makes the working class the middle class are unions. And the investing class in this country over the last 30, 40 years did, in fact, attack industrial America, to bring down industrial America, because that's where unions were. And the result is we don't have an industrial base in our country anymore. We don't make anything here anymore, because like Ahab searching for the great white whale, the investing class was ready to slay the whale, even if it meant the destruction of the whole damn ship and every crew member aboard, because they're focused on killing the American labor movement for what it does for the American worker.
Arthur, for the last 10, 20 years, the union movement has stumbled, has fallen, and has gotten smaller, except for the public sector. But now the public sector, the government unions are under attack.
Of course.
What's your thoughts on that?
Over 30 years ago, I attended my first New York State AFL-CIO convention. At that convention, the president of the shoe workers got up and talked about the fact that they're importing shoes from Italy. His union was losing membership over that. Now, I was in the public sector union, so I didn't give it much thought. Years later, it was the textile workers. Years later, the garment workers and the auto workers. They've gotten through that part of the list. The next people on the list that are unionized are public workers. So now they're coming after us because they've already wiped out the other ones. It's to be expected, given what the agenda of the investing class is. We are the last bastion that offers working people a chance to live with some dignity, that gives them a decent wage, benefits, and a pension that they can retire on and live with dignity. Those things seem to be a threat to them, and they will do what they can to get away with them. The unfortunate part is they are turning one half of the working class against the other to achieve it. They are convincing people to vote for candidates who are prepared to institute a destruction of labor in the public sector as well, rather than people in the private sector doing what they need to do, and that is organize and unionize to get the protections that they need and look at the government workers' standard of living as a standard they need to achieve.
CWA Local 1180, who are your workers?
We represent mid-level and supervisory employees in New York City government primarily. We also organize in the private sector in the nonprofit areas, such as Planned Parenthood, The Nation magazine, and some other units as well. So for us, it's important that we in the public sector, who unfortunately, for most working people, are invisible. People turn on their tap and they expect clean water, and they get it. That's delivered by the public sector. People flush the toilet and expect it to just go away, and it does. But they don't think about the fact that it's public sector workers that make sure it's properly disposed of. Picking up the garbage, keeping the streets maintained, educating children, providing for the public health. All things that are invisible. And people ask often, well, what are my taxes going for? You don't even realize what your taxes are going for. Because the public sector does it so well, you don't even notice it. It is only when it doesn't work that the corporate media focuses on that and magnifies it far beyond the proportion that it should be. It is easy to just point to the mistakes and not acknowledge and understand what goes on day to day without you even realizing it. Government workers are the foundation upon which commerce, industry, and the civil society are built. And there are those in the private sector who would rather not have a civil society. They would rather have distress and anarchy, because from that they are able to profit. And that is exactly what they do.
Arthur Chiliotis, thanks. You're heartened by the splendid turnout in your red shirts today. And this splendid outpouring of, well, I think hundreds of thousands of people. I haven't heard any official numbers, but that's what it looks like to me. And we are here with a Muslim brother. Perhaps you can tell us who you are and what brings you here today.
We're representing Masjid al-Islam. It's the largest Islamic center in Washington, D.C. We came out at a rally talks about jobs and justice. It seems like the country is going downhill at such a rapid pace, with so few people trying to pull the country back from the brink of its own suicide. The policies of the past have been a suicidal policy for the country, socially, economically, politically. America's losing all of its friends all around the world. America's jobs are already gone. And so now it's good to be here to see people finally waking up and saying, hold it, that we have to rebuild ourselves. We have to redevelop ourselves. And so it's a good idea to have this rally today.
Wondering how these problems manifest themselves. What are the problems in your community?
We're from Southeast Washington. First of all, there's definitely the jobs. There are none. The schools are falling apart. The grade level is dropping. The prisons are exploding in our neighborhood. They're spending triple the money on prisons, on a prisoner, as they would on a college graduate. When a brother or sister goes to court, they ought to sentence them to 4 years at the University of Maryland or Virginia or D.C. instead of sending them to prison. They would save a lot of money. Yeah, they would save one-third the money. So the policies of the past administration, the Bush administration, and what have you, is a policy of failure for the people of America.
Brother Minister, I can't help but ask, as you know, in New York City, there has been a virulent argument that has erupted in tremendously hostile, anti-Islamic feelings. Tell us about your thoughts and your concerns about that discussion and the creation of a cultural center and a mosque in proximity to the site of 9/11.
Well, the whole controversy about Muslims as citizens of America, some of the best citizens that they have in the United States are Muslims. This whole controversy, from the Islamic Center to the Quran burning and all of that, is the forces of evil harnessing, they call it the battle space. And here comes this Barack Obama can come out while he got troops in Afghanistan, while he has troops in Iraq, right, while they're assassinating people in Somalia, all of that. They can come and say, no, America is multicultural, multinational, everybody, love and peace. And no, the last thing I want to say is to solve the problems, the global problem now. It's not just a race problem. It's not just an economic problem. The whole earth is out here being killed by capitalism, right? So the first thing we got to do is rescue the earth. Think about it. The people are so greedy that they'll destroy the things that give us life. It's like the flea getting so powerful that he can kill the dog. The human being that live on the earth is so powerful now that it could destroy its own host. And it doesn't have the institution to rescue itself.
Brother Minister, thank you very much for taking the time. Good luck in D.C. and, you know, in a sea of an awful lot of attractive shirts. I'm seeing one of the nicest black and white shirts, got what has to be a mine worker on it. And Ken and I debated, you think the brother's a mine worker? Did he come from all the way down there?
We come from, I'm 50 miles south of Pittsburgh. I work in the mines there. Member of the mine is Emerald Mine. My name is Ricky Polk.
And what brought you all the way from south of Pittsburgh, from the Emerald Mine, here today?
This labor movement. People in America got to wake up to some of the causes and about everything. So we're down here supporting everybody.
A lot of people, when they say mine workers, think about mine safety. You work in the union mine?
Yes, I work in a union mine.
Are they safer than non-union mines? Tell us what's happening with mine safety.
You see all these mines having these explosions and stuff are their non-union facilities. Union mines, not that it couldn't happen, but we have safety committees and different things, and you can use your individual safety rights if you think something is unsafe and you can't be reprimanded for it. You just say you don't want to do it because you feel it's unsafe and you're not fired. But in all these non-union places, people under the gun, they tell you to go do a job, and it's probably not safe most of the time, and then they go do it, and some things happen.
More and more, there's a lot of contempt expressed for organized labor, for unions, for working people. What do you tell those people about yourself, about your blood, sweat, and tears, about your union and organization as a member of the United Mine Workers?
You know, like the United Mine Workers, although we're mine workers, we organize a lot of other different places too. And we try to give them equal rights in their workforce. We try to get, like I said, other people that are having problems, they come to us and they want to be organized, and we organize them and try to get them a decent wage on their jobs.
And what will it take to organize the non-union miners throughout the country? Do we need to change the law? Do we need to change the union movement? What do we need to do?
Well, a lot of these non-union people, like far as in Pennsylvania, like we're mostly union, but there's a lot of other places not non-union, and it's hard to organize there. because we try to organize, they give them this and they give them that, and like a lot of times they don't get a raise until we come around. So we tell the people, said, hey, for us coming around and you're getting a raise, that means you're not getting a fair wage in the beginning. And then a lot of times they work them 6 or 7 days a week with a day off. So then they're tired of it. Then they come see us. Then they want to be organized. They get tired of working so many hours and they're not getting their time and a half and double time like we got in a union mine. And they get tired of it. And then they want to talk to us.
How do you feel about the Tea Party movement and Glenn Beck's rally as opposed to the rally here today?
The Tea Party movement, they're not for labor. Glenn Beck, he's not either.
Thank you.
He's a hero.
I think you both are. Turn it on. I think I like this mutual admiration society because he says, no, he's the one you should speak to. He's the president. He says, no, this is the leader. Now, Cecil Roberts, you are the president of the United Mine Workers. I want a mine safety bill. It's still stalled. What's happening with that?
It's done really well in the House with respect to the committee. We believe we had the momentum on our side, obviously, after Upper Big Branch. Some changes that we needed from the 06 legislation that passed after Sago and Aragoma and Darby, we needed additional safeguards placed in legislation. Congressman Miller from California was kind enough to show some leadership with respect to that. But it's like a lot of other things that working class people need. It's sitting there in the Congress, needs to be voted on, needs to be moved out of the House, needs to be voted on in the Senate so we can protect these coal miners in the United States.
So what is the problem? Is it the Republicans? Are the Democrats not giving it enough priority? Do we need more people to die before they pass this?
Not a single Republican in Congressman Miller's committee voted yes. They all voted no. So that shows you where their priorities are. They're for the industry making profits at the expense of health and safety. Now that's moved over into the full House, and I would expect that you'll get very few Republicans voting for it there. Part of the answer to your question is yes, that the Republicans are a problem here, and I would suspect that they'll vote no and try to hold this up on every level that they can.
Cecil Roberts, how many members did you come to Washington, D.C. with today, and why did they come?
You know, we're a long, long ways from the coal fields here. It's about it's a long trip for our folks, but we probably got 100 people here or more. They came because they believe that we've got to activate ourselves, get motivated, get out there, and take on those people who are out there and who seem to be very enthused themselves, and make sure that we elect people that we can count on for health and safety, and we count on to get the right to organize, count on to protect Social Security and Medicare, and all the things are extremely important to working class people. And sometimes people think that these elections are about who's running. Their elections are about who's living in this country and what kind of country we're going to have.
Getting back to safety and health again, union mines are, of course, much safer than non-union mines. So what's it going to take to unionize the other mines? Do we need the Employee Free Choice Act? Did Obama do enough to get that passed? What are we going to need to do to get that passed?
Well, we absolutely need the Employee Free Choice Act if we're going to organize the non-union coal mines in this country, because I can tell you that this union has spent millions and millions of dollars attempting to do that, and we have not been successful because people like Don Blankenship, who owns the Upper Big Branch mine, not only operates unsafe mines, he violates every labor law in the country also. The people at Upper Big Branch tried 3 times to form a union. And 2 times we went to an election supervised by the National Labor Relations Board. And both times Don Blankenship made it a choice between having a job or not having a job. And no one's going to vote to do away with their job. Don Blankenship made it clear, I'll shut this coal mine down if you vote to have United Mine Workers here. So that is something that has to be fixed in this country because, quite frankly, the people in southern West Virginia who work in these mines do not have a right to join a union in this country. You have more rights in other countries than you do here.
But have the Democrats made that enough of a priority?
Well, I believe that some Democrats have clearly done that and taken a leadership position on that in the House and the Senate. But we've had some Democrats who have walked away from that issue. I think President Obama has made it clear that he wants the Employee Free Choice Act passed. When he addressed us at the AFL-CIO Executive Council, he looked around that table and said, if I worked in a coal mine, I would join a union. He said that right in front of every single person there, and that's a public statement. That's the last. I don't remember another president saying he had joined a union since Franklin Roosevelt, quite frankly. other than President Obama.
Mr. Roberts, one of the things that I want to ask is maybe a little bit on a more theoretical basis. If I had to pick one of the icons of the working class, of people whose blood, sweat, and tears built this country and continues to, the mine workers. So how do you begin to explain or understand the kind of anger and simultaneously rejection of working people and what they stand for, of groups such as the Tea Parties or the representation that was here just weeks ago with Glenn Beck, the contempt indeed for the working class, the very people like yourself, your members, who risk their lives continuously? I don't get it.
You're not the only one that doesn't get it. I think there's a whole millions of other people in this country that, quite frankly, don't understand that there are a lot of people. By the way, this is the 75th anniversary of the start of the CIO. And if you go back and look at your history, we just dedicated a plaque up on a boardwalk in Atlantic City to commemorate the convention of the AFL when John L. Lewis punched the president of the Carpenters Union in the nose and took workers and leaders out of the AFL and started the CIO, and millions of workers joined the labor movement, and that's actually the start of and the beginning of the middle class itself, when workers could actually buy their own homes, when they could actually send their kids off to college, when they could actually go on vacation and live a middle-class lifestyle. That was the start of it. And until we get that same kind of right back in this country to fight for and protect the middle class, we're always going to be on these kinds of struggles. But this frustration that we see out there, I think that this Tea Party movement has tapped into the anger, the frustration of the working class, and stolen that movement from us. And we need, as we're doing here today, to make a stand and fight back and make sure everyone understands it was a labor movement and a Democratic Party that gave us Social Security, that gave us Medicare, gave us a right to organize, gave us unemployment insurance, gave us the right to go on vacation, gave us a right to send our kids off to college like everyone else. It was a labor movement and a Democratic Party working in conjunction together that did those things. It was not the Republican Party, and certainly was not some far-right organization like the Tea Party.
Cecil Roberts, it is an honor. Your members are very dear, very courageous, and they deserve much, much, much more than they get. And you got to get that mine safety bill.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Ooh, you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one.
That's a beautiful rendition of the Beatles Imagine by Pam Parker. And just as the imperative I felt for me to put on Vance Gilbert's rendition of Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come, I thought about this as well as I embarked very early in the morning on the bus and then disembarked, and all around me were seas of colored t-shirts, the yellows, the reds, the SEIU locals with their purple, yellow, and white shirts, and the working class, the people coming together, not with divisiveness, not with battering us into fears.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive. Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.